Picture a Prussian aristocrat clinging to a 2-inch ridge at 90,413 feet, bleeding and gasping in the thin air of what was believed to be Earth's highest peak. Alexander von Humboldt wasn't there for glory or conquest. He was there to measure, to observe, to understand. Standing before an impassable crevasse on Chimborazo in 1802, he experienced something that would revolutionize how we see our planet. Nature wasn't a collection of separate parts to be cataloged and controlled. It was one magnificent, interconnected organism where everything related to everything else. This insight, radical for its time, would make Humboldt the most famous scientist in the world, yet somehow lead to his near-total erasure from English-speaking memory? How does someone who warned about human-induced climate change in 1800 become forgotten? Born in 1769 into Prussian wealth, Alexander's childhood at Tegel Castle was intellectually rigorous, but emotionally barren. His mother prized perfection over affection. While his brother Wilhelm studied Greek mythology, Alexander escaped to the forests, collecting plants and insects until family nicknamed him the Little Apothecary. These weren't idle hobbies. They were a lonely boy's survival mechanism, building armor through wonder. The late 1700s rewarded curious minds. Scientists had completed the first international collaboration, observing Venus's transit, solved longitude puzzles, and filled blank spaces on maps at breathtaking speed. Nature was being reimagined, no longer God's mysterious creation, but a great and complicated machine governed by discoverable laws. Young Humboldt absorbed it all in Berlin's intellectual salons, buzzing with ideas about tolerance, education, and reason. When his emotionally distant mother died in 1796, 27-year-old Alexander inherited $100,000 and immediately resigned his mining inspector position to pursue what he'd dreamed of since childhood, exploring the world. In December 1794, Humboldt met Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, the literary giant behind the sorrows of young Werther. Despite bitter winter cold, they trudged through snow each morning to attend anatomy lectures, discussing nature's hidden patterns. Goethe sought the Urform and archetypal shape underlying all life, believing the leaf was nature's basic template repeated throughout the plant kingdom. Humboldt exploded this idea outward. If individual organisms had underlying forms, why not nature itself? What if the entire natural world operated as one unified system, animated by interactive forces? He began looking for connections rather than isolating specimens for classification. He married Goethe's artistic sensibility with rigorous measurement, bridging Newton's mechanical universe and the Romantics' subjective poetry. Through Goethe, Humboldt gained new organs for understanding nature eyes that could see both the individual flower and the global climate system simultaneously. Science didn't have to be dry dissection. It could be passionate, poetic, and rigorously accurate. After years of failed attempts, Humboldt secured permission from Spain's King Carlos IV to explore South American colonies. In June 1799, he and botanist Aimé Bonpland sailed from Spain with 42 scientific instruments. Arriving in Venezuela's Cumana, they encountered palm trees with red blossoms, kaleidoscopic birds, and sky-blue crayfish. Bonpland claimed he would go mad if the wonders don't stop soon. But Humboldt's greatest discovery wasn't a new species. At Lake Valencia, locals reported rapidly falling water levels. While others blamed underground outlets, Humboldt's measurements revealed something revolutionary. Humans were changing the climate. Forest clearing, water diversion, and soil erosion were altering the region's hydrology. When forests are destroyed, he wrote, springs are entirely dried up. Western thought had long positioned humans as nature's rightful masters. Humboldt flipped the script. We weren't nature's controllers, but its disruptors. Everything is interaction and reciprocal, he concluded. Standing in that Venezuelan landscape, watching a lake die from human interference, Humboldt became the world's first environmental scientist 220 years before climate change dominated headlines. After months in rainforests and grasslands, Humboldt embarked on a brutal 2,500-mile Andes trek. They crossed the Quindío Pass at nearly 12,000 feet through thunderstorms and blizzards, navigating 8-inch-wide mud-slicked paths. Their shoes disintegrated, forcing them barefoot. Glass specimen jars shattered. In Quito, Humboldt systematically climbed every accessible volcano, peering into Pichincha's crater, despite violent tremors and suffocating sulfuric vapors. Then came Chimborazo, the monstrous colossus that obsessed him. On June 23, 1802, they began their ascent. Despite altitude sickness causing vertigo, bleeding gums, and nausea, Humboldt set up instruments every few hundred feet. They reached 19,413 feet before a massive crevasse blocked them. They hadn't summited, but something more important happened. Looking down from that vantage point, everything suddenly connected. He saw how vegetation zones changed with altitude just as they did from equator to poles. Nature wasn't isolated specimens, it was a unified web. This moment birthed his revolutionary Naturgemälde, a visual cross-section of Chimborazo showing plants distributed by altitude with columns of data about temperature, humidity, and atmospheric pressure. For the first time, someone had demonstrated that nature functioned as a global force with corresponding climate zones across continents. Returning to Europe in 1804, Humboldt settled in Paris, publishing prolifically in a dozen languages and becoming second only to Napoleon in fame. His masterpiece came at 65, when he declared, "The mad frenzy has seized me of representing in a single work the whole material world." Cosmos would encompass everything from distant nebulae to microscopic mosses, from landscape painting to human migration patterns. The first volume's April 1845 release was unprecedented. 20,000 copies sold immediately, with readers literally fighting for the second volume. Cosmos profoundly shaped the American Renaissance. Emerson incorporated its ideas into his nature essays. Poe dedicated Eureka to Humboldt. Whitman kept Cosmos on his desk while writing Leaves of Grass. Darwin arranged for a copy during the Beagle's voyage. Thoreau's Walden observations reflected Humboldt's methods. Emerson praised how Humboldt had swept clean this sky full of cobwebs, removing old superstitions while maintaining nature's poetry. The book demonstrated that scientific understanding didn't diminish wonder, it amplified it. Humboldt's intellectual descendants transformed our relationship with nature. Darwin credited Humboldt's personal narrative for inspiring his Beagle voyage and Origin of Species. Thoreau found confidence to blend science and poetry at Walden Pond. Ernst Haeckel coined ecology in 1866, naming Humboldt's interconnected vision. John Muir captured it perfectly. When we try to pick out anything by itself, we find it hitched to everything else in the universe, pure Humboldtian thinking that inspired the National Parks Movement. When Humboldt died on May 6, 1859, at age 89, tens of thousands followed his funeral procession through Berlin. Yet today, he's largely forgotten in the English-speaking world, a victim of specialization, anti-German sentiment during world wars, and knowledge fragmentation. But Humboldt's vision has never been more relevant. His holistic approach underpins modern climate science. He warned that mankind's mischief disturbs nature's order after observing colonial devastation. As we face climate change and biodiversity loss, his concept of Naturgemälde, nature as a living whole, offers crucial perspective. Stand in any forest, on any mountain, beside any lake. Everything you see is connected. Humboldt saw this unity 220 years ago. The question isn't whether nature is interconnected, it's whether we'll finally listen.